Hello.
Hello.
It feels like forever since we spoke, yeah?
Yeah.
Well,
I don't remember the time.
so, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Good. Going through these weird times, like the whole world population. And
Yeah.
trying to navigate through this. So,
You
and how
told me
about
that.
you?
Well, I'm doing well. Tired. Lots going on. Lots of trainings and work, of course. But I want to mention that you told me that where you are, your masks are off. Yes?
Yeah, that's right. Well, the physical masks are off, and I hope that all the other masks will follow.
But is that happening though? The other masks are following, or what's happening?
What I mean with masks is like, that you say one thing and that you mean another thing. So many people do that, like, I love you, and then they really hate you. But I'm not sure. I think this is the time where we're living in is that it's really revealing truth and it's really bringing stuff to the surface. So it's getting harder and harder, I guess, to keep up appearances. Yeah.
Keeping up appearances.
Yeah.
Say more. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I've seen, what I see in my practice a lot is that people cannot keep up the life they were living, where they were really working hard and, maybe making a lot of money, but also being very unhappy with their lives. So they are really invited. I think that's the time of the energy of this time where we are in now, really inviting people to be real, because so many things fall away, or there is a danger that things fall away. That the only thing that is left in the end is yourself and who you really are, who you truly are. So if your money falls away and your relationship, of course, because people have spent a lot of time together and maybe too much time together, being too close to each other and triggering all the time. So relationships and also securities and all the things that we have been holding on to for many years, they fall away, and now we have to just be true to ourselves.
So being true to yourself or being true to ourselves, shedding the so-called mask or the outside appearances
Yeah.
and stating truth or from a place of what? Contact or community or from a place of separation and lower self.
Yeah, of course, from a place of contact, but first contact with yourself. So I've been doing an energy reading also with one of my friends who is also. And so how do we navigate through this time of big oppositions? And that's what's going on now. There are big oppositions and it's really hard to stay true to yourself, I guess, for a lot of people. Because of pressure, because of peer pressure, because of the things that we are told all day long that it is, for example, it's not safe to be unvaccinated or, it's really hard for people now to follow their own path because there's so much opposition and so much judgment on following only your gut feeling. It has to be backed up by science. And if you're asking questions about the science, then you're like a lunatic, maybe, and bringing other people in danger. So, but what I feel when I go deep inside and I connect to this space where I am totally in contact with myself, my own body, my own needs, my own knowing, which is not mental, but from a deeper place, then I can be true to myself, even if I don't know if what I'm doing is the right choice, maybe, you know, in this bigger chaos where things can be totally right and totally wrong, and we are fighting over it. But if I go deeper inside into this space of knowing, then maybe I don't know what I know, but I know what I'm doing and living is right.
So following your path, following what's right for you eternally.
Yeah, moment to moment, because, you know, we cannot see what happens in maybe a month or maybe 3 months or in winter or what will happen then. So I can make a choice in every moment, what's right for me now.
Good. You know what the choice is. What do you do? What's your process?
Well, one of the things that I'm really grateful for is that I have a lot of people around me that have the same sensitivity as I do, and the same, maybe not the same ideas or concepts, but at least a possibility to feel into situations and then live it in the moment that it's there, and not trying to live in the future or trying to live from the past. And from a place of control, for example, but more in, okay, what's wise now and what feels right now. So what I do a lot is also talk with the people that are energetically intelligent. Let's open up our intelligence to more than just a mental, you know. I think that's a big part in this situation, that we do not only have like IQ, like mental intelligence, but also spiritual, emotional, and physical intelligence. So we can live from a broader perspective than we have before, where mental intelligence was the biggest rule or denominator where we live from. And now I think that we have this option to live from more places of intelligence. So what is my process? Of course, what is my process? I guess my process now is that I feel sometimes really overwhelmed by living in the city, and there is a lot of chaos and a lot of tense energy. So I'm trying to go back to nature. And that's like not really normal for me, because I've lived in the city forever. And I've always lived in an apartment, no yard, no garden. So, but now I feel that I have to go back to nature. So like, let's see how I will arrange this, or, you know. And that also makes me very insecure because I don't have the money to buy a piece of land, for example. I'm not like a very rich person. And in the Netherlands, to buy a piece of land, you have to be, well, sort of wealthy. And we don't have a lot of space to buy land. It's not like it's everywhere. So that makes me also scared. Yeah. So what I do is go back to the body. So I try to, you know, I live in an environment with a lot of water. So I try to, now the temperature is better. So I try to swim every day in the water, in the natural, you know, natural water. And connect with my body. And the water helps me to discharge, to let go of the energy that's really keeping my body tight and stressed. Yeah. So that's where I am in this process of shedding also, you know, shedding off. I think that's really difficult because we've been living in this, you know, certain mold for a long time. And this time is really about shedding, I guess, shedding everything that's not you. Yeah. And try to... Yeah, and try to relax in this, and it starts for me with the body because, you know, mentally I'm strong and I feel, you know, connected to myself. But my challenge is to be in the body and to relax so I can feel what is right for me, not from fear and from the contraction, but from a more open space.
Not from fear and contraction, more open space. So you create that opening or that space within yourself so that you can be present.
Yeah, and it's a challenge, you know, because my body really reacts. And I've been trying to find my space of opening and relaxation for years now. First in overcoming trauma. So that I could really be open to life. And then also in overcoming my images, like more like the mental images that, you know, trying to change this feeling of I have to have to work hard and life is a struggle. You know, that keeps me, has kept me in this space of contraction. And now it's more to come back to the body or nature, to be able to feel this space where before I didn't even allow this space to be a thing, a reality, you know. Now I have this whole inner freedom where everything could be a reality, but not like the physical relaxation that you need to be able to live from, really to enjoy life and, you know, live in the moment and be happy with everything what happens right then. Yeah, you need also an open body. Yeah.
Yeah,
and trauma is something that really makes the body rigid, and yeah, it has this certain, you know, ways of behaving, even when you've worked through your own emotions and images, then still his body is contracting every time it's triggered.
Right, the body memories.
Yeah. Yeah. So how about you? What's your process in this?
My process is relatively simple. It's simple to say, it's simple to stay. It takes a lot of practice and awareness in order to really be there. So for me, when I feel triggered, I go back to my, much like you, and I track what's happening in my body. Once I feel that I'm triggered, the first thing I do is ground. And that's easy for me because of my martial arts background, to bring awareness to my Dantian or to my center. From there, I whatever's happening in my body, for example, when I feel angry or I'm starting to feel angry, my jaw starts to clench. When I'm aware, I will relax it and say, okay, take a breath. So in mindfulness, some people say that's the use of 7-11 breath. So count 7 in, 11 out. I don't really track the number of breaths. I just take a deep breath. And I ground what the emotion is. So if it's anger, I know that sadness is always underneath the anger. Okay. And I'll use the mindfulness check or witness, ask, and experience, or what's here now, to track what's going on. Because for me, when I'm angry, it's usually not about the present moment. It's about something that happened in the past or something I'm projecting that might happen. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, that's my process. Grounding, take a breath, recognize the emotion, what's here now, breathe, change it, or check in with the other person. But it also, if I'm alone, I can do that. It's pretty quick. And Barbara Brennan used to say, from chaos or anger or ER to bliss within 15 minutes or something like that. Yeah. That really works when you apply it.
Yeah. So, and if you're looking at your process, like more in a broader sense, like what's your process of shedding? What are you shedding? What are you, noticing in this, time lapse where you're in now?
Yeah, so
if it's about shedding or becoming more, yourself or truth or whatever you see around you where you're confronted with.
Okay, so it's a little bit of all of that stuff that you just named. The truth is important for me, becoming more of who I am is important. And in some areas, that's fine. I can do it. I can navigate pretty quickly. I can speak my truth. In areas of race, especially when I'm talking to someone who is white in the States primarily, it becomes difficult.
Yeah.
Okay. We actually did a training this weekend with a facilitator. Well-known facilitator did the color of fear. We talked about being heard, being seen, being validated, being mirrored back, much like you and I talked about with the safe conversations and conflict resolution. Slightly different, basically the same.
And when that's a documentary, isn't it?
The Color of Fear, yes, it's a documentary. Yeah.
And people can look it up.
You can look it up. The author and director is Lei Hun Hua. I believe he's out in California, Berkeley area. So he does trainings. He teaches conflict resolution as to prepare healers, counselors, organizations to understand diversity, okay, and to have conversation. So for me, I notice that when it comes to topics of race, and speaking to someone who's not of my race or ethnicity, it becomes difficult. And I navigate my emotions or my words very specific. I have to be, because there's so many people who get triggered, want to defend, don't hear. So we have to walk a certain way, be a certain way. almost to the point of being emotionless at times. Okay. Yeah, so it's different when, if I talk about gender. Gender is much more comfortable issue for me. I can talk about gender, I can talk about sexuality, I can talk about sex, I can talk about certain things. The other area that I have difficulty with for some people is religion. I don't want to get into a debate when it comes to people's religion, because I'm open to hearing everything, because I'm fascinated with people's beliefs, where they come from, how they hold on to them, and what makes them take a position that they take.
Yeah.
I like to do that without judging or showing my side or telling them that they're wrong.
Yeah.
It's their opinion, their belief. It's cool.
Yeah. What I really find interesting, and I think I've learned that from you of one of the series we followed, is about diversity. Mm-hmm. What is the difference between diversity from a more white perspective and a more black perspective? Can you talk about that?
I'll talk.
Because what I know about it is that, you know, like in companies, they have all these diversity trainings. So white people come in to train people about diversity. And then it's like, we have to help black people to blend, sort of. Or I don't know how it works, but that really, really touched me then, that diversity from this white trainer's perspective is something different than how you would define it.
Yeah, I think this is a touchy subject, so I'm just going to name that I feel a little bit nervous about it, especially for the listeners who may not agree. And there's a part of me that's like, you know what, I don't really care. That's their opinion. I'm open to having conversation about anything.
Yeah. I can imagine. I mean, it's like really on the spot then. But
no,
I remember that it really touched something in me, like how white people are so are trying so hard to help you guys, and it's such a weird, you know, weird perspective.
Uh-huh.
We shouldn't be here to help you. We should maybe, you know, give some room.
Yeah, really interesting people outside of this. So I love that you're naming it, because in the States it's a little bit different. Okay. The responsibility is put on the person of color to do a lot of things. Yes, there are trainers who come in who want to teach diversity. Diversity as they understand it. So one of the things that comes up in issues is that everything, for the most part in the world, is based on white thinking. Even psychotherapy, psychology, male, white, most times Anglo or Christian, Protestant, Jewish beliefs. And those beliefs then get pushed on to universities around the world. And this is how you conduct therapy with everybody, without regard to a person's ethnicity, their background, their culture, their race. So it's a one way fits all, cookie cutter. And if the person of color shows anger, then in certain psychotherapies, that's a negative thing. Okay. Or sadness, this person is depressed. Or they don't show anger at all because they are, in black culture in the States, you don't show anger, you don't show emotion. because it's not safe. You're looked at as weak, or you're looked at as the angry black man, black woman, trans person. You know, it doesn't really matter, but it's showing too much emotion, there's a label attached. Showing no emotion, then you have no heart. So it takes a very culturally competent healer or therapist to understand, or better yet, ask questions. Okay. The asking of questions opens up safety, creates safety for the other person across from, because they feel, I feel seen. I will feel that this other person wants to hear about me. I can imagine that it's the same thing when it comes to gender. You know, if you're working with a man who's, oh, you're too emotional.
Yeah.
Now, have you had an experience like that where a male therapist or someone told you you're being too emotional?
Or No, that just life. I mean, you cannot be emotional, you know? And now I'm at the point where I think, yeah, if you're a woman or have a, you know, feminine body, there's a lot of emotions. And not to say that men don't have emotions, but there's a lot of emotions. So, yeah, every time with partners, I was too emotional or hysterical or you know. No.
Dare I say it? It's that time of the month. Have you heard that?
Yeah, that one. For example. Uh-huh. And now I think, yeah, it's very, you know, it's just the water of your system. It's coming and going. And right. There's a lot of information also in it. I mean, people who cannot be angry, they also suppress their power.
No. Yes. Yeah. And I believe that anger is important to get us moving forward.
Yeah, it is. And the tears and your emotions, your hurt or your sadness is very important also to soften the body. As soon as I have cried, then I feel so much more space in my body. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I've been too emotional all my life, and now I'm getting less emotional because, you know, I get more freedom inside, maybe not to react as fiercely as before. Right. But still, I think emotions are good. But can you say something more about, you know, what your experience with shedding this and where we were before with race? And
yeah, so overall for me, I do really well with tracking myself, especially with emotion. The emotion of sadness comes up, and obviously I don't want to shut myself down. There are certain situations or places where I will suppress my sadness. It's just not appropriate in that space. However, I don't repress it. I do not deny it. I'll name it.
Mm.
Okay, which is different than I would have done 20 years ago or before. I'll name, I'm feeling sad. I feel sad. And to naming it, whether the other person cares or not, it's for me. To me, you know, I'm feeling sad. Subconsciously, I hear that and I say, wow, okay. And my shoulders start to relax a little more and I'm creating that space. I understand this isn't the place to have that release. You can release when you get home. If it's between the two of us, I may allow myself to release. I know there's not going to be a judgment or a dismissal of where I am. For some people,
go ahead. Yeah, so what's your experience then with white people when it comes to this?
That's great, because that's one of the things that came up in the weekend, is I tend to withhold because in my experience, especially this past year, teaching has been horrendous. It's been very painful, shut down, thrown back at me. Or the other person would say their piece without recognizing that I even exist. And they go into their shit without saying, hey, wow, I didn't realize that you were experiencing that.
Yeah.
What do you need? And so, you know, there's a thing called black male privilege. Wow. Oh, I've never heard of that. What is that? Google it. That's the reaction. Okay. Namaste. I'm going to let myself go or ignore myself because I know that this is a violent situation. I can't maneuver. So an instance like that, I would shut down. In other instances, when I can tell that it's going to be a good conversation, or at least a conversation, I don't know if it's good or bad, then I can open up more. And I also like to hear the other person's point of view at some point. I'd love to hear their point.
Yeah, so what I notice when you say that, that you don't feel that you get enough space or that you're being heard and people are throwing things at you, like their own perspective. Mm-hmm. I felt that a lot in my relationships also, you know, that when the other person thinks something and you think something and it's opposite, that you only throw things at each other without really opening the space up for conversation or, you know, to really listen to each other. So this is like really like a defense pattern that many people have, including me, or at least I used to. I was really good at this. But I also felt often like the lesser one because I wasn't mentally or verbally as strong as the other person.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. And I can imagine. Yeah. And I can imagine that if there's like this, you know, what you said before, this white male dominance that we have to fight as women, but also as black men, maybe really fight hard against it, which doesn't help the process.
Right. So yeah, there, that piece, I heard you say that in your relationships in the past, you would have these issues come up and neither one of you is hearing each other, you're throwing things back and forth at each other.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't create a relationship.
Yeah. And would it go differently in other cultures? Is that something that's more in our culture, in like a white culture, or is there more space to explore this in like a black culture? I'm wondering.
I think that that's a good question. I think that people want to be heard, want to be listened to. And whatever culture, I get curious about, if I were to say I'm angry, or I'm feeling angry right now, I'm feeling separate right now, I'm feeling scared right now, how I may be held in a certain group. So with other men, I might not say I'm feeling scared.
Yeah.
Okay. I may not say that. Now, a group of, I might say that. So I did a men's group or a men's sweat lodge this weekend. And I trust those men. We're all sitting in the inipi, this fire, the hot stones and this heat. And we're brothers. We're sitting in there together. We're sharing our prayers and sharing our sadness and sharing our peace. I felt comfortable with those people, so I shared my experience and what's going on for me. And I consider those people my brothers. And in the Native tradition, we are brothers. Okay. So yeah, I felt heard. There was no competition. And that's one of the things that was stated when we're sitting in there. We're men here without competition. There's no competition. Yes, we've all felt like we wanted to punch somebody in the face. Okay. I mean, it's an action. We don't do that. We don't do those things because we have more of ourselves and we can hold each other. We hold each other accountable. We hold each other in the sadness and the frustration. And we can hold each other in our tears.
Yeah.
So a group of people who are open to receive is the most important.
Yeah. And also very important what you say, to hold each other accountable. Mm-hmm. That's something that I tended to find very difficult. You know, when I am called on my actions, I would have a big reaction. So I feel that's, you know, when you get start to ground more in your own truth, it's easier to, you know, withstand maybe someone else's criticism and also to feel whether it's true or not.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I deal with that pretty much daily.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I thought. Yeah. So can you reveal something about that?
Thank goodness for heart.
Hmm.
Okay. And for mindfulness training and for trauma training and for people who have been and people I trust to call me on my stuff. Okay. And the way that they say it or the way that they hold it, that's important because when I know that I'm not being blamed or where I've gotten now is I recognize that the other is in pain. Okay. Where I can support them is say, okay, this is their pain. I'm going to validate what their experience is. I may not agree. I'm going to validate their experience. And if they have an experience of something I may have said that hurt them, I'm going to own that.
Yeah, but at the same time, you still have to be the mature one. And, you know, you have to be very evolved then, if I hear you, evolved as a human being and as a healer and a therapist to be dealing with the things that you're dealing with as a black man. So can you tell me something about what you have to deal with?
As a black man, yes, it depends on who the conversation is with. Okay, there's always the fear. And I'm going to say this is a fear for the majority of black men.
Yeah. So that's good to know. Yeah.
Yeah. Where I don't know how much information you get in Europe, but in the States, there's this label of Karen. And Karen is basically a middle-aged white woman, certain way, who wants to push their beliefs or their judgments onto someone else. Okay. Yeah. Especially people, black men. Black men particularly. Okay.
Yeah.
Where they've called the black men for exercising in the park or going into their own apartment building, asking them questions. Do you belong here? What apartment do you go to? I don't know. You know, I'm not going to let you in. Don't touch me, things like that. And if it hadn't been for recordings, you know, these smartphones, It would be that woman's word against the black man's word.
Yeah.
And so this is a phenomenon that's been going on for generations here in the States.
Yeah.
And so for me, when I have conversations with white women who I'm not in relationship with, I'd like to have a third party present. Or if I can't have a third party present, I want to record the situation so that I will have evidence if it's needed. Now,
this that sounds really unsafe. It's really unsafe that you need to do that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is a new thing. I didn't do this in the past. You know, my partners have been white, and so it's not necessarily, it's a safety piece now for me and a lot of men I know. And I would also caution women to do it when you're speaking with other women at times. And it's painful to even say that. And it's become a reality.
And wow.
For me, it's very painful. People can misconstrue ideas or thoughts, then go in what we call gaslighting, report you. And this is how they were, this is how they are, they said this, they believe this. I said, no, that's not how the conversation went.
Yeah.
And actually the conversation is completely different.
Yeah. So there's a lot of fear from women or white women to black men.
Absolutely. And our and in the States there's a long history of women making accusations, in particular white women making accusations.
Yeah. So I don't think it happens like that here, but you know, since I'm in a different, also in a different reality, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But I do remember one time when I had a client, and I often do, you know, like one-time sessions. It's like readings, and I do assessments of their energy field and give a lot of information so they can go on with that. And this time it was a man who contacted me, and he had like not like a Dutch name. He was from somewhere else. So like maybe the Middle East, something like that. So I felt scared too. And I found it so, you know, so stupid of myself to be scared of only a name. It was only a name. So I was really considering even to, you know, to ask my neighbor to be there or to be standby. So if there was happening something that I could call her. In the end, I didn't do any such thing, but, you know, I could really feel it in myself, how there is fear of something foreign or not white, not my kind of structure. And we had this great reading, you know, it was such a beautiful reading and such a, yeah. And what I could really feel into was also this. He came from a mountain area somewhere in the Middle East. So I could really feel this clarity of the mountains and the, you know, the openness of his upper chakras and also the how he could feel like really not in his place when you have to ground here on our ground, you know, this he moved from there to here when he was a little child. Mm-hmm. So these kinds of, you know, readings, energy assessments really helped me to, you know, to overcome my biases and everything that's that. But it's not that I was raised that way, not at all. It's not in my, you know, in my family. My family has, I have a stepdad who comes from, or at, well, is half. From a white mother, from a white mother and a black father. Mm-hmm. So I was raised in this, you know, quite open space. And still I could feel this, you know.
Yeah.
Being scared. Yeah. Yeah. And it really helps me that I can find, I can feel energy so that you can pass these outer judgments or
right.
where you judge someone on their color or
right.
whatever, religion or sexual preference or whatever. Yeah.
That's why I feel that bias training or bias work is so essential to us getting to know each other much better and to understand what our beliefs are, what culture says about this group of people, what culture may say about this other group of people,
yeah.
and what our relationships are to this type of thinking or beliefs. I mean, after 9/11 in the States, I had to fly. Actually, I was scheduled to go to New York on the next day on one of those particular flights to New York. And once we were able to fly again, I was my wife at the time, who was pregnant, and the heightened security being pulled out of line, but being told, okay, because of our last name.
Yeah.
And if it had happened once or twice, it's fine. But it over and over and over
yeah.
again.
Yeah.
The worst one was when we went to New Orleans for a concert. And at that point, we had the MRI. So she carried the MRI with her. And she would opt out of going through the metal detector because, of course, it could have an effect on the fetus. The TSA agent, and I know that they were just doing their job, so I want to say that. I don't want to make it seem like everybody who's in those positions is an asshole. This particular person was an asshole.
Yeah.
And here this person who was pregnant, didn't want to have, she had experienced a miscarriage in the past, didn't want anything to go wrong, opted out, wanted to be patted down. Okay. This particular agent gave her such a hard time. She started crying. She was processing. She was in a really bad state. And the reaction was, now, because you're crying, makes me believe that you have something to hide. There was no empathy, there was no compassion, nothing, just the hard, and she's white, okay, and this, so that, watch, really fucking painful to watch, and that's because of a name, not even matching a description, what you believe, or just a name. And it's constant, oh, it's a random selection. No, it's not. Let's understand it's targeting. Okay, it's racial
yeah.
profiling.
Yeah.
And then it's painful. And you can have empathy. You can be soft. You can be gentle when you're, yeah, I know this is inconvenient. I really, so quick. And,
yeah.
Oh, you're pregnant? Okay, how far along are you? While you're doing this uncomfortable
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
So those are pieces that I believe can be
yeah.
different.
And it would also make your work a lot, you know, more fun and rewarding if you can then come to the heart and do the same job, but from a different place.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so we had an experience later on a different flight as we got to the, actually on that same flight. So that's what happened. When we went up to the ticket counter, we could tell that the woman behind the counter had been having a rough time, that people were giving her a hard time. We went in. Hey, how's your day? Oh, thank you so much for asking. Now, we had just gone through a fucking rough experience, and we still were able to come back to ourselves, ground, be present, and see that someone else was having a hard time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really sorry. You know, what can make your day go better? Oh, You're the first person who's asked me that.
Yeah.
Said, oh, yeah, no problem. And that woman, I wish I remembered her name, a good 19 years ago, said, well, thank you for being so nice. I'm going to upgrade you. Wow.
Yeah.
And I could tell that she had been getting it from passengers. She had been the victim of everybody else's rage or anger. So going back to the original question, how I deal with it, I know somewhere inside that that person's anger or rage is not directed specifically at me. I can name and recognize it, which allows me to be with the person.
Yeah.
It still hurts. I feel the sting, and I have to come back to myself. Wait, hold on. This isn't really about you. Let's see if we can be with the other person.
Yeah, but that's very difficult, I guess, for less experienced people and when you're triggered yourself.
Oh, it's different every time. And for me, my martial arts training comes in handy. We do a lot of training, self-defense training, where we practice with people in your face, yelling, screaming, and we have to be present and take it. And we hear the most painful things, you know, in these simulations, calling the N-word, saying things about your mom. I mean, this is in preparation for what may happen out on the street. So I've done so much training like that, that it doesn't bother me in the same way. Lies about me, that's one of the things that I can't stand. I don't like it, and it's an injustice, and it's a violence. It's a different type of violence.
Yeah. So what would be the number one thing then? When I'm thinking about trainers who are giving like diversity trainings, what would be their number one mistake? Can you say that?
The number one mistake is not listening. Not listening, not reporting back to the best of your ability, exactly words that has. When you do that, you can allow for the speaker to make adjustments, to clarify. If you don't understand something, ask for clarity.
So
that's the number one thing, and not to assume that whatever you heard or whatever is the truth. And let's go underneath. Let's go for the deeper meaning and message. We get stuck. I witnessed it. People who've been doing this work for a long, long, long time, many years, 30 plus years, getting triggered in their emotion, wanting to justify their actions. It's like, wait, that's not what was said.
Yeah.
And we as audience members recognize that this person was in their emotion. So that's what some people would call the monkey brain taking over and the rational brain not being present. So that's another one. Asking for clarity, not asking for cultural meaning. If it's a person of a different culture, or even if it's the same culture, there may be differences in the household, okay? Not all people have the same experience, even living in the same house. My brother and I, same parents, have totally different experiences when it comes to my dad. He was my dad's favorite. I was the oldest. He never got into trouble. Okay. What? Are you kidding me? No, Dad was great. where the fuck were you?
Yeah.
Not my reality.
But, yeah.
So
yeah.
You have to ask for meaning, ask for clarity.
Yeah.
What about you? What do you think?
No, I was thinking that there are so many experiences that it teaches you so much about the world if you are open to the diversity, and especially when it's different from your own right reality. It's so cool. I think it's really cool, the diversity, but we I think, like, yeah, that's what the thing with diversity is, that we really would like to have all people fit into our way of thinking.
Yes.
Well, the point is, I guess, that we see all the different perspectives, and that there's space for all these perspectives, which might be very different. But we would like to, you know, from a white perspective, we would really like to invite people into our perspective.
I love your word invite. Let's change that to make.
Yes, of course. No, but let's say that they are trainers who really want the best, you know. They really want to help organizations to grow and to change. So we try to not exclude people.
Yes.
And by having them in our perspective, we are not excluding everybody. but yeah, I agree. So this is the dominant perspective, and we don't let other perspectives, you know,
yes,
be there and have the same value or the same weight or the same meaning as in.
Right.
No, still, that's, we right, would like to people to adjust.
People to adjust to me. Adjust, yeah, to me. Do what I want.
Yeah.
That's that. I would call that a demand. And that's,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Of course.
And that's what it is. It's,
yeah,
feeling safe. You have to be like me. You have to be like-minded. You have to do things like that. That's one of the complaints. Okay, so I'm going to tell a story. I don't know if you remember this, because I was your teacher years ago, and I show up. Of course, I'm the only black man in the school, student or faculty. And I noticed there's a great group. You had a great group of people from all over Europe, and I think one or two people from Turkey. So it's a great group. And the looks on some of your classmates' faces when my co-teacher and I sat across from you was very painful. It's like,
really?
Oh, shit.
Wow.
Yeah. And one of your classmates said something about, well, you're coming here as Americans and you don't know anything about us. And I looked at each other, and we validated this person. I'm not going to say his name. I'll tell you after.
I'm curious.
we validated him and said, you know, we don't know, and we would love to know, and we're going to do our best. And immediately when he said that, I felt the charge. I wanted to defend myself. I said, no, hold on, wait. And both of us, the co-teacher and myself, said, yeah, and true, we are coming from the States and we don't know. So we'd love to learn. And at the end, looked at each other and said, oh, and by the way, neither one of us was born in the States. And yeah, I saw smiles like you're smiling now. So there was an assumption made,
yeah,
about us. And both of us have unique names. So, you know, and we could get to know you, you can get to know us to understand that. We may have a lot more in common. And I was really grateful for him naming that. I was really grateful to, because I felt it. And so it validated my feeling. And I was still triggered. Mm-hmm. I still felt that I have to say something. Yo, how can you don't know. Coming back to self helped a lot. Grounding helped a lot. Having my co-teacher be present also helped a lot.
Yeah.
That's how quick it can happen. Yeah. And I understood what your classmate was saying. We want you to fit in to the way we do things here.
Yeah.
You're an outsider, and we don't want.
Yeah.
Wow. So much in that, just that little statement.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can also, you know, this also happens when you.
Now you know who it is.
Yes, I saw the name. I saw the name, really. You pulled it up. Yeah. So this also happens a lot with, I think, like a lot of people are now focusing on feminine leadership. So feminine leadership is something else than male or masculine leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the feminine leadership has to be done in the male structure.
Yes. Yes.
So
that's something that we've been talking about. That's something that we want to challenge and to transform. Because I don't know what it's like in Europe, so you're going to have to share that with me. I'd love to talk about that in the next episode, the male patriarchy, and how, I'll just say this part. I hate it when people, going back to what you said about earlier, are emotional. That women in the States are vilified as the B word. Okay, I don't know if you guys, what the word is in this for you, but it's a derogatory word. If they show power, if they show leadership, if they are a certain way, or they're called a derogatory, there's a derogatory reference that they may not like men, and all of these really horrible, horrible assumptions, okay? Because a woman may be a more assertive leader. So we want all men to be men and never say anything and cook and clean. No. So then there is an exacerbation of that male dominant position. A lot of women go into power. They feel that they have to hold leadership like the men.
Yeah.
So that's the next episode.
No, we have something else for next time.
Okay.
Yeah, but we'll do this one too. Yeah.
Yeah. Always a pleasure.
Yes, same here. Yeah.
Thank you for the conversation. That really felt good.
Yeah, it's nice. Thank you for sharing. Yeah. See you next week.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.